Hi, everyone. Welcome to episode 17 of Marketing Elements Podcast. And we're joined today by Clayton Morris, who you may know from Fox News, and also his podcast, which is Today in Social Media. Welcome to the podcast.
Thanks so much for having me.
Well, thank you for coming on. We appreciate you taking time out of your busy schedule to come on and talk a little bit about social media with us.
Sure. I think love talking about it.
Yeah, I enjoy it myself and constantly talking about it. I think I drive my friends crazy. So, but it's part of the space.
I do as well.
So
yeah, you have to be a little excited about it, you know, because people just don't see the value in it. A lot of businesses still are just slow to move in that direction, and they're like, oh, I'm not going to do that. And, you know, they're being left behind.
Exactly. I live in Atlanta, and we have a couple of Fortune 500 companies, and we always ask them at events, it's like, do you have someone dedicated to do your social media? And 9 times out of 10, it's like, no, it's still being shared.
Right.
And it's like, really, you need to get someone dedicated to it. But companies just don't see, they're like, we want to see the return on investment. I'm like, well, you can measure it somewhat, but you're going to get left behind. It's going to be that much harder to catch up. But
right. Yeah, the ROI is sometimes hard to quantify, but, you know, it's there, and it takes a little bit of time to build that ROI, but it's not as tangible. You know, you get it more through brand equity than you necessarily get it through, you know, monetization.
Definitely, yeah. And who was it? Former CMO of Kodak Hazlett. I saw him speak in Atlanta a couple weeks ago when he said he didn't do return on investment. He did return, I believe it was return on capital that they didn't have to spend out. So he said they did a contest where they named the new Kodak video camera. He goes, instead of having a big contest, we put it on Twitter, saved countless amounts of money, and therefore we got a name in no time. It took half the time it normally would. And he's like, we discovered it, did it, done. He goes, we didn't have to go through legal. We didn't have to go through contest rules. We just posted it, got in, what did he say, 30 or 40,000 in suggestions, and finally did it. So it was like, that's awesome.
Wow.
He goes, then we go back and say, here's where we saved you money. We saved you money here, here, and here, and it only cost us like $60. So.
Right, and bringing value to an audience too. You're opening it up to an audience that has buy-in. You know, it's the brilliance of what some other companies have done recently. Mountain Dew, for instance, is a great case study in what they've done in social media, which is to open up their new flavors and new suggestions to their fans. And you know, they basically had them join Facebook fan pages on Twitter, and they got to vote and come up with the names and create the flavors from the ground up. They let them test it before anyone else. They had them vote on it from top to bottom. It was really a social media driven experiment for their new flavors of Mountain Dew, and they've got thousands of fans on Facebook as a result of it, and those people are their evangelists, and you know, it doesn't cost them anything, but then they have buy-in.
Mm-hmm.
And it's interesting, according to Daniel Pink, who had written a fantastic new book last year called Drive, What Motivates Us, and we find that people aren't motivated by getting money and or items. What they're motivated by, if you look at Wikipedia, is to be part of the creative process. You know, if someone's obsessed with Star Wars and they want to write on a Wikipedia entry about Star Wars and they're curating that information, they don't need you to mail them money and say thanks for doing it. They want to do it because they enjoy the creative process of doing it.
Definitely. Definitely. Yeah, because when people feel they're a part of it, they're more likely to support it in the long run than just go, oh, I got a free sandwich or a free bagel.
Right.
So,
right.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. And I think we're seeing that more and more, because I heard one person speak at a conference a couple years ago saying that social media is kind of taken over for like the focus groups now. So you don't have to pay for the feedback, because like you'll get it whether you want to or not. And you just need to pay attention and see if it's a reoccurring theme for many people, then you know it's an issue. Or if it's something good, you know you're on the right track. So, and I thought, I was like, yeah, it'll save you a ton of money with that.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's just amazing social media lately. So we have a few topics we're going to talk about today real quick. And I guess the first one we're going to talk about is Consumer Reports saying the iPhone is a no, do not buy.
Yeah. Well, this comes on the heels of what they announced last Friday, or two Fridays ago, which is that they didn't see this iPhone reception issue as a widespread problem. And I have to say, that jives with what I've been experiencing. And then Consumer Reports releases this study today, where they went into their radio labs at Consumer Reports and studied three different iPhones that they had purchased at three different locations in New York City, and tested them and had reception problems by doing the iPhone death grip which is holding the lower left-hand corner of the iPhone and bridging the gap between the two antennas where that little black strip is there, that little piece of rubber.
Yeah.
I don't know. I still find the results dubious. And I still, you know, what people want to know, is this going to hurt Apple? And I don't know. I mean, honestly, it's not good for Apple.
Yeah, I agree. But I don't think for the true fans, they won't really stop, not buy it because Consumer Reports says not to.
Yeah, I mean, well, look, I mean, we buy things, and we see this through social media, that there's a multiplicity of reasons we buy products as a result of our friends telling us, right?
Definitely.
So, you know, we're less likely to buy a product because we see an advertisement or, you know, sort of some sort of casual suggestion of the product. But when all of our friends own iPhones, you know, we're more likely to buy that product because they've had great experiences with it. And I have to say, in all my testing of the iPhone 4, I haven't been able to replicate any of these reception issues. And neither have my friends at Engadget, at TechCrunch, my friend Michael Gartenberg, who works for Altimeter Group. He hasn't been able to replicate this problem. I think it's anecdotal. And I think there are, yes, there are a number of people who have experienced these issues. I also think that some of these issues may have come with a certain batch of the phones. So, you know, I don't know how widespread it is, and I don't know that it's dropping calls. I think in some ways it's probably just, you know, there are reception issues on any phone when you're holding it a certain way. I think it just, it appears more precipitous on the iPhone because you're seeing those bars drop as a result of it. And if you're in an area with bad service, that drop could force you to drop a call. But if you're in an area with good service, you're not likely to drop a call.
Yeah. And I know they've said for years and years, New York area is the worst for, and San Francisco the worst for iPhone usage because there's so many concentrated right there. So this probably could be adding to it as well.
Yeah.
The urban areas, I know Atlanta at certain times can get very bogged down with traffic and people start freaking out when they can't use their iPhones. I've seen it happen here at conferences.
Okay. Yeah. Oh, certainly.
Can't use my phone.
It's like, yeah, when you get in these concentrated areas, you're certainly at conferences and such, you're going to get people that are, you know, going to have these issues.
Definitely. So I saw it and I was like, I don't think it's really going to hurt Apple per se for their really loyal fans, but certain people who are on the fence now will probably take a look and go, I'm going to look at Android now as opposed to Apple. So
yeah,
long run, I don't think it'll do too much damage to them.
I don't either. I mean, but this also comes on a day when Android Google announces a major announcement with Android, which opens up the platform so that people can develop their own Android applications with almost a drag and drop style design for Android applications. And, you know, I'm not sure how welcome this is. I'm pretty excited to give it a try, but I think also that it could be a problem and it could create a marketplace of crappy applications.
Yeah, because Apple just, what, in the last 6 months said, we're not doing the cookie cutter applications. You've got to come up with your own. Didn't they do that in the App Store?
Well, I mean, Apple just has a higher standard for applications that they let in there. And it's, you know, I just think the problem with some of these Android applications is there's still not any good games on the Android platform. And so you're going to have somebody over the weekend creating applications that it's just going to, I'm just worried that it's going to muddy the app experience for Android. You know, if you have people whose livelihoods depend on developing applications, they tend to turn out good applications.
Yeah.
Then you have someone over the weekend who just decides to be a hobbyist and create a to-do application, and then I go searching for to-do applications, and there's 4,000 of them, and you know, 3,998 of them are crap because someone decided to create one over the weekend using this new drag-and-drop tool. You know, it's not going to make me happy.
Yeah. And then, yeah, because the App Store... on a side note, I was telling a friend of mine this weekend because he has the new Evo phone and he loves it. And I was like, you know, it'd be really great if Apple sold Android apps in the iTunes store.
Right.
I was like, that would be brilliant, but Apple's not going to do it. So
no, no way.
I'm just like, you could make a fortune on it, but whatever. Apple's set in their ways and want it done their way.
Yeah.
And I think it was, I'm not sure if it was your show or if it was This Week in Media. We're talking about Apple and Google. They either like it completely closed off or completely open. There's no in between with them. So they either want to own it or they want everyone to be able to play in the space, so, which I thought was a good analogy for both companies.
Yeah. Yeah, and you see the tale of two worlds. You see that with Apple. You see that with Microsoft. You know, it's a tale of two worlds, one open, one closed. And you know, you get great innovation in a space when you have more people being able to play in that space. But at the same time, you run the risk of what's happened to the Android marketplace right now, which is, yes, you're nearing 100,000 applications in there. But it's like looking for a needle through a haystack. You know, that's just what it looks like right now. It's certainly not the clean environment that it is in iTunes. And it's just a matter of preference.
Yeah. I have friends who are IT people, or my IT geek friends. They love Android. And I have, like, everyone else, like my marketing people, all love iPhone. Right. So it really depends on what you're comfortable with, I've noticed. Because my friend who loves his Android is, of course, IT. And everyone else I know is like, I want something simple, easy, iPhone, bam, I'm done.
Right.
So, but it's just a matter of preference. So one other thing we're going to talk about, I guess, is location-based marketing. And that's kind of come up lately. Everyone's talking about it's going to be the next really big thing out there, but like Foursquare, Gowalla don't have a lot of people, and everyone's waiting for Facebook to finally unveil their location-based. So how do you see that arena going to change with Facebook or in the future? What have you...
Well, I mean, you know, this year at South by Southwest, down in Austin, Texas, all eyes were on location. And I'm still not convinced we found a clear path for location-based services. Yeah. And I think that, you know, when businesses can integrate location into applications, or you're a business that, you know, is very savvy, and you decide to go on Yelp to your Yelp profile, and you've got a company, let's say you've got a small flower shop, you know, it's incumbent upon you to make sure that your profile is up to date on Yelp, that your information is curated well on Yelp, so that if I'm nearby and I'm looking for flowers, I'm able to find your business. To me, that's location.
Yeah.
You know, I'm nearby, I need flowers, who's nearby, who's done well in social media to let me know you exist. It also is incumbent upon businesses to go to Google and curate their own social profiles within Google. You know, there's a Google small business template that enables you to go in, add photos of the interior of your business. It also enables you to, you know, add your map location. It'll give you a general area of where it thinks you're located, and you're able to drag and drop the pin on the map so that it's exactly where your business is located. You're able to curate that information on Google profiles within your small business profile to give me accurate location-based data. As far as using Foursquare and Gowalla and all of these other location-based services, you know, until I think the future of search is social.
Yes.
But I'm not into, you know, when I'm here and I'm looking for ice cream and suddenly a little coupon pops up that, hey, a block away, if I come down here and buy some yarn from your yarn store, that's helpful. That's great. You know, it shows that I'm nearby and that's useful and that's wonderful. But I think the real future of social media right now is in social search. That is, I am in New York. Let's say I'm in zip code, you know, 10036, which is like Midtown Manhattan or something. And I want to find, and I'm in town for 2 days. And I know that a lot of my friends probably travel here, or some of them maybe don't. Maybe a few have. But anyway, I do a search on Google, or I do a search in Facebook somehow. And what I get instead of, you know, I type in burgers, and instead of just finding random burger locations that pop up in Google search, I'm finding searches that are relevant to me. That is, my friends have recommended these burger places near me, so those search results bubble up to the top of search. You know, John and Tim and Mary have all eaten at Five Napkin Burger, and they gave it, you know, this amount of stars. They ranked it on Yelp as a good place to go grab a burger. Those search results are far more relevant to me than the random search results that I get from just doing a general Google search. All of that is still local, and all of that is still location-based. It's just, I think, outside the general think and theory of Foursquare and Gowalla, which has become a bit of a game. You know, I check in, I get a mayorship. Big deal, you know.
And I've had a bunch of people I know who've been using both of them have kind of like slacked off. And I know a couple people who have said, I only check in places where I'm mayor, and that's about it now. It's kind of worn off. It was fun, but now it's kind of eh. But
yeah.
I agree with social search. I think that's one thing I've been wondering about Facebook for the longest time is, like, you have all this data on everyone on Facebook, which is a lot more than Google has on us. And you can actually go in, people can hopefully sooner or later rate different things and do a search and have search done. So it comes up, oh, so-and-so likes this. See whose favorite places are nearby that's in your circle.
Right.
And that's always making me wonder, it's like, okay, Facebook has all this data. Is this something they're coming out with? And with the F8 conference this year, it's making me think, okay, you're moving in this direction. Because I told friends, it's like, if Facebook gets in social search, Google's done in social search. Because how much information Facebook has. I told friends, they have everything that you've ever done on Facebook. What you like, what you don't like, who you're friends with, who you're not friends with. Everything, it's still there. It goes back to when you first started. So I was like, they have so much data to pull from. Whereas Google has, like, if a Gmail account, I know they have more information, but they have, like, your tracking number, but they don't really know who you are to some extent. But Facebook has a lot more than Google.
Right. And, you know, the beauty of what Facebook has all under its one house, they have all of your photos. They have your, you know, where those photos were taken. Obviously, you know, with geotagging has been added to Facebook. So they have that information. Facial recognition is about to be, you know, is rolled out now with Facebook. But, you know, Google, and with the launch of, and rumors still holding strong with Google Me, you know, their answer to Facebook. Rolling out their own version of Facebook, hope, you know, very, very soon, it seems, and all signs seem to be pointing that way. They have all the things in place, right? I mean, they have the video capability.
Yep.
YouTube, they own YouTube. They have Latitude, Google Latitude, which is their map-based geolocation services, which they haven't done much with. They have Picasa. You already upload, you know, millions of people use Picasa to upload photos, and they've certainly done a great job of iterating Picasa. I use it actually to upload most of my photos and store them. They have great geotagging, facial recognition, a lot of stuff in there. So they have all of the pieces in place. If Google can add that layer together and bring it all together the way Facebook can and curate the web the way they did with the – or curate social the way that they did with curating the web in the 90s, look out. I mean –
Yeah, I agree. I know they've been working on it, but I didn't know they were getting close to it. So that's cool to know.
Yeah, I mean, it's something that they're working very hard on, but it's hard to say. And I've reached out to some friends at Google, and, you know, everyone's sort of tight-lipped about it. But it'll be interesting to see if they can. I mean, they're scared of Facebook, but they know. I mean, if Facebook is trying to curate the web for social, and they want to organize it the way that Google organized and indexed the internet a number of years ago. There's no reason that Google doesn't see that as the future and is not going to try to organize and curate social as their next big thing.
Definitely. Yeah, I know they've been working on it and rolling out things because Google is kind of one of those companies that sort of like – I consider it with Apple too. They're kind of cautious at first. They'll release something and then they'll keep adding to it. So it's not just here it is, here's all the bells and whistles. Here's the basics and we'll add to it.
Right.
So, and I think for both companies, that's pretty smart because I said that with the iPad. I was like, yeah, I was like, it's cool. I was like, I'm not sure if I want one first generation, but second or third, watch out. They're going to do some really cool things with it.
So, yeah.
So you have to watch both companies very closely.
Yeah, absolutely.
So I know you have to get going. So, because we're right up at the time limit you gave me. So I want to thank you for coming on the podcast. I really enjoy talking to you and enjoy your podcast. You come out. Was it four times a week?
Yeah, I have a Today in Social Media, which is a daily, you know, short podcast, short and sweet, about 10, 15 minutes, trying to cover the news of the day, plus some larger sort of theories about social media if you're new to social media. And then I also host a Grizzly Bear Egg Cafe, which is a weekly podcast where we just talk about science fiction and nerd stuff with my best friend Mike. That's about an hour podcast. So,
yes, I'm starting to get in that one because my geeky side too. So I was like, yes, okay.
Well, thank you. Thank you so much. I appreciate that. Well, yeah, it was great chatting with you as well. Thank you.
You too. And look for Clayton on TV and on the internet, people.
Great. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to Marketing Elements Podcast. You can reach me at tim@marketingelementsblog.com. You can find us on the web at marketingelementsblog.com. Look for us on Facebook or find us on Ning. It's marketingelements.ning.com. Thanks again, and we'll have another podcast out to you very soon.